Good morning. One of the elders asked me to teach a class. I said yes, but it's been a few years since I've taught. Let me explain a couple things to you before I begin. The reason most people don't attend class, most old people, we can't set that law. 2 hours is a long time for an old person. We're kind of like reverting back to our second childhood. We can't sit still. Everybody's saying, what's wrong with him? And if we do sit still, we go to sleep. They asked me to teach, and it's kind of special for me to teach an adult class. I moved to Arizona. I was there 3 weeks, and they asked me to teach the adult class. I taught in 1 Corinthians. That's the last time they ever asked me to teach. I moved to Jala, New Mexico, and they asked me to teach. I said, sure. And they said, well, we need a junior high teacher. And that was the toughest ones of the bunch. Then they graduated up to the high school, and they said, we want to move you up with the high school kids. And I figured it out. We had a bunch of retired preachers, and they were the ones that wanted to teach the adult class, because we had a bunch of old people in there that sat there and went to sleep. So they were never challenged on anything. So I don't want too much challenge today, and I'll try to get to you. Try to lay it out as I see it. This is supposed to be a Bible study. You know what a study is? Well, we're going to find out pretty shortly what a study is. The first thing you do when you study is you read your lesson. How many of you have read the lesson previously coming here today? We don't have too many people lying this morning. I taught the high school class, and I found out right quick, if you ask them to read the lesson before they come to class, it's went over their head. Some of the time I didn't read mine. Anyhow, we're going to study today about overcoming discouragement and frustration. What is discouragement? Discouragement is to be deprived of courage or confidence or to be disheartened. Frustration is a deep, chronic sense of state of insecurity and dissatisfaction arising from unresolved problems or unfulfilled needs. Everybody got that? I got that out of the dictionary. It didn't mean a whole lot to me. This often transforms into depression. Depression is a state of feeling sad, dejection, or what have you. Let me read Psalm 43. I know it's here. Psalm 43. Judge me, O God, and plead my cause against an ungodly nation. Sounds like times we're living in. O deliver me from the deceitful and unjust man, for thou art the God of my strength. Why dost thou cast me off? Why go I mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? O send out thy light and thy truth. Let them lead me. Let them bring me unto thy holy hill and to thy tabernacles. Then will I go into the altar of God, and unto God my exceeding joy. Yea, upon the harp will I praise thee, O God, my God. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise him, who is the health of my countenance and my God. So before we get too deep into our discussion, there's our answer. Hope in God. Years ago, some years ago, not too many, 60, 80, 70 something years ago, I was in grade school here in San Angelo. I got a good education. The first thing they taught us in this one class was how to study. You have 6 questions that you ask in everything that you say and do. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. So, actually, when you study, you have to have a plan of study. When you got up this morning, you had a plan. You was either going to dress, or you was going to go eat, or you was going to the bathroom. You organize your day, whether you know about it, whether you think about it or not. You have a plan. God had a plan. In the beginning, He had a plan. As we do daily, we plan. God planned His. George, I'm in Exodus instead of Genesis. No wonder it didn't look right. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was out form and void. And darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. Let's get back to the problem here. The plan has to have a beginning and an ending. Have you ever seen people that were walking, and you say, where are you going? And they say, well, I don't know, I'm just walking. Well, if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to know when you get there? So here's the plan with God. In the beginning, as we read, in the beginning, what? God. Who? God. What? Created the heavens and the earth. When I was in grade school, another thing they taught me was we were supposed to read books and give a book report. This book report, there were a lot of smart boys in my class. Very few smart girls. When they read a book, they read the whole thing. But the boys would read the beginning and then slip over to the end. Of course, our teachers weren't first-year teachers. They knew what was going on. So they asked me, what happened in between? I said, look, everybody's listening to my book report. And I'm making this pretty interesting. And some of these people may want to read that book. If I tell them everything about it, they won't read it. What's the purpose of having a book report if it's not to create interest? Well, that didn't work too well. But the idea is you read the book. You read the whole book. That's in God's plan too. We go to John. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. What does that mean? Who is the Word? Jesus Christ. So that tells us that in the beginning, God and Jesus were there in the beginning. Now we know that in the beginning, God had a plan. God had a plan for man. He had a plan for the world. He had a plan for reproduction. He had a plan for salvation. All the way through this plan, things worked out. Here we have, and it had a beginning and it had an end. What's the end, brother? Judgment. So we know that in the end, there's going to be a reckoning. In your school, Randy, the beginning, you tell them. You teach them. In the end, there's a test. This test determines whether they go up or whether they stay there. Our test is not going to be quite the same. If we do pass the test, we have an eternal life. If we don't pass the test, we have eternity too. It's not going to be quite as pleasant as eternal life. But the plan that God had for man, He put them in the garden. Everything was beautiful until the serpent comes along and tries the woman. And she gives in. Then she gives to her husband. So what's the result of the plan? The woman is going to go through the pain of childbirth, and her desire will be to her husband. Women, think back when you were young. You played with dolls. The boys, most boys, didn't play with dolls. They played with little cars or little horses or little cowboys and Indians. But the woman, her desire was to a baby. She played with this baby. But her desire when she gets older is to her husband. Most women do the cooking, the cleaning, and a man goes out and does the work. So we get down to, why does a man have to work? God said his redemption will be toil from the sweat of his face. So man is supposed to work. As time progresses, things change. But God never changes. God is the same today, tomorrow, and in the future. When I was young, men were farmers, ranchers, blacksmiths, various things like that. The work they did was toil, truly toil. They truly sweated. When they went home, they were resting. They ate. They went to bed. We didn't have TV. We didn't have lights. We used lanterns and what have you. But time changes. Change is something that old people don't like. Young people like it. But old people don't like it. But it's something that we face. Change is something that happens to our body. When we're young, we begin to grow. We lose our first set of teeth. We get our second set of teeth. As we get older, we lose that set of teeth. We go buy us another set of teeth. But change goes on every day. It's something that we each and every one have to face. Let's look at somebody else besides God's plan. Let's look at Moses. When we read our lesson plan today, let me read a little bit of it here. The best of people become discouraged and frustrated. We call it having the blues or the blahs, being down and out or being in the dumps. Some of the very finest biblical characters were victims of discouragement. So we're talking about Moses. Moses was the youngest of three children. Miriam, his sister, the oldest, then Aaron, then him. That's pretty discouraged if you have brothers and sisters. They pick on you. You're the runt. You get the brunt of everything. So he could have been discouraged there. God chose Moses over Aaron. Moses tried every way in the world to get out of it. I can't talk. I'm not eloquent. But my brother is. So, well, we'll just let your brother do that work then. But you're going to be the man that leads my children, my people, out of Egypt. So they start on a journey, a 40-year journey. The best I read it, Moses was about 40 years old when he started this journey. So 40 years, this man deals with these people. They are always wanting something. They wanted something to eat. God gave them quail. Good, great, can't eat that stuff every day. So God gave them manna. Now they didn't like that. So Moses goes up on the mount to speak to God face to face. He gets up there and he gives him the Ten Commandments. When he gets down, back down off of the mountain, what had happened? Here's Aaron, his trusted brother, who's smarter than he is. He's a leader too. The people had enticed him into making a golden calf. Surely Moses was disheartened at his brother. He was very disappointed. But they go on. We get over to the people murmuring, still wanting stuff. They wanted water. Let me read you something here. And the people thirsted for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt, to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, what shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to kill me. And the Lord said unto Moses, go on before the people, take with thee of the elders of Israel, and thy rod, wherewith thou smoteth the river, take in thy hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there on the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because the chiding or the striving of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Now, many people today, if you ask them the question, why is it that Moses didn't get to go into the land of the Canaan? They'll tell you it was because Moses smote the rock when God told him to speak unto the rock. Well, there is another reading that says that where God says, speak unto the rock. So what's the answer? Well, if we go over to Deuteronomy 22. Not Deuteronomy, but Numbers. Got my tongue twisted around my tooth and couldn't see what I was reading. Numbers 20. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod and gather the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth with water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So they give the congregation and their beasts drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, and he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he said unto them, hear now, ye rebellious, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? Let me read that again. Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted his hand, and with his rod he smote the rod twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron. Did you get that story? Here God said, speak unto the rock. Does that mean that he didn't tell him to strike the rock? You know, we have different people telling different stories. But here, Moses is spending nearly 40 years of his life leading these people out of Egypt. Let me pause just a minute. If you read the Old Testament and recall this in your mind, there are several occasions when the Lord speaks unto the people and said, I am your God. I am the God that led you out of Egypt. So God actually led the people out of Egypt. Moses was his agent to accomplish this task. But here we find Moses spending 40 years leading these people out of Israel. And because he struck the rock, he doesn't go into the land of Canaan. Let's read on. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. So if people ask you that question, why didn't Moses get to go into the land? It was because he did not sanctify the Lord. What does the word sanctify mean? It means to set apart. And in this case, it means that Moses and Aaron said, must we give you water? So I think Moses probably had a good reason for being dejected, disheartened. Yes, brother. I can't hear you. You're going to have to speak out. Yes. Yes. If you didn't hear the brother, he said Psalm 106:33 tells us that by his mouth he disobeyed. We have others here. There's Noah. There's Abraham. Abraham was an old man, and the Lord told him, says, I'm going to make of you a great nation. He says, I'm going to make of me a great nation? I'm an old man, you know. So I'm going to give you a child. Well, his wife was 90-something years old. But Abraham was a pretty smart man. He took him a concubine to help the Lord out. But that wasn't the Lord's plan. He gave him a son. And then he tested him to see how he liked it. He told him to take his son and go in and offer a sacrifice. Well, he didn't have anything to offer but his son. But the Lord provides. The Lord always provides. We look at Job. He was tested many times. You know he had to be disheartened. Even all his friends turned against him. Then there was Paul. Paul was a highly educated man. He studied at the feet of Gamaliel. At that time, this was really something. So he was highly educated. So we see Paul on the road to Damascus. He was blinded. So he had a thorn in the flesh. And God told him, says, don't worry about that. Just do my will. My word is good enough for you. You don't need that. You can carry that. So we see all these people that God, if all these people that are mentioned in our lesson today, God had singled them out. And they have a story there. God had a plan for each one of them. But they were singled out. We know that there's others that are mentioned in the Bible, but they don't tell that story. Like Demetrius, the goldsmith. He's mentioned, and he had a plan. He had a real plan. These guys were trying to ruin his business. He's making money making these idols and these various things. But that wasn't in God's plan, and we don't see any more about him. But let's take a look about us today. When we finished high school, most of us' plan was to finish the high school. Boy, if I can just get out of there, I've got her made. When you finish high school, Dad says, go ahead and get jobs, huh? Oh, that's maybe I better go to college. When you go to college, first thing they ask you is, what's your major? What's your intent? What do you want to do? You want to be a teacher? Get a PhD. You want to be an accountant? Be a CPA. You want to be a doctor, an MD, a nurse, an RN, a lawyer? Well, decisions, decisions. You know, you have to make these. So, let's go back to our plan. and how we study. The question here, what do you want to be? What? Well, I'm not real sure. Well, why are you choosing to do this? There's usually two reasons why you want to do this. For the money or for the power. There's two options. Why'd you choose to be a teacher, Randy? For the money? We look at this and say that I don't understand what you're saying. Well, when Dad told you to go get a job, he didn't mean go out and find you something to do that enjoy. He says go out and get a job. Why did he get a job? To make a living. To earn your keep. Let me read you something here. Psalm 62 and 11. God has spoken once. Twice have I heard this. That power belongeth unto God. Man is always looking to be just a little bit better. Most men, when they take a job, they have to start at the bottom. Well, it would be a whole lot better if you didn't have to start at the bottom, if you could start at the top. When you start at the top, you have the responsibility of everybody else. But you have the power. You have the power to fire people. You have the power to hire people. With that power goes responsibility. Most people who've ever been a boss realize that when they come up through the ranks, they had a lot of friends. And when they get to be the boss, those people kind of deserted you. They look at you as being in another category. He's not my peer anymore. So with the power comes other things. Psalm 63 and 2 says, to see thy power and thy glory. Most people who want to be a boss wants the glory of being the boss. But any time we're up to that point, it's not always pleasant as we thought it is going to be. Every time you get another job, there's always something goes with it. You make more money, but you take more responsibility. So let's talk politics momentarily. I predict that in the next 5 years, this country will be a socialist country. What is socialism? It's government ownership and administration and distribution of goods. The man, I can't tell you his name, that's head of Facebook, he made the statement this week that Facebook can fill the needs, can replace the church and fill those needs. And that's what people are looking for, is fulfilling my needs. Young people today were really enchanted by our socialist presidential nominee, who said, I'm going to give you free college education. That's socialism. It's right next door to communism. What is communism? Communism is the elimination of private property. Goods are available, they're in common, and they're available to all as needed. But the head of the government determines who needs it. How about a monarchy? A monarchy is undivided rule or absolute sovereignty by a single person as a king or a dictator. How would you like to live in a kingdom? We do live in a kingdom in the church, do we not? It is the kingdom of God. And God is that absolute power. And God makes the rules. And he says, if you don't abide by my rules and keep my commandments, then at the end of my plan, there's going to be salvation or eternal judgment there. So regardless of what we look at, there's always something that deters us from wanting something. Let's look at democracy. Democracy is a government by the people, or the rule of the majority. And that's supposedly what we live in here today, is the rule of the majority. Well, what happens when you don't like what the majority put out? That's what's happening in the world today, is rebellion. People don't like authority. People don't like who's in charge. It doesn't matter who's in charge. There's somebody that ain't gonna like it. When a man gets married, sometimes he don't like who's in charge. But he's married and he has to abide by what she says. Let me read you something that I thought was, I hadn't given this any thought. What does the rainbow symbolize? The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that everyone's inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. Genesis 6:5. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth. Genesis 6:7. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds of the air were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left and those who were with him in the ark. Do you suppose that Noah preached to the people? Do you suppose Noah answered people when they said, what are you doing? He said, I'm building an ark. Said, what's an ark? Well, it's a boat. What's a boat? Well, it's to float on the water. Where's the water? Well, it's going to rain. It's going to what? It never had rain. What God had watered the earth by dew, bringing it up, not down. So God said, I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Genesis 9:13-15. You probably knew all that. You've probably read Genesis and knew exactly what I was saying. I had. In the year 2015, evil inclinations in men's hearts prompted the legalization of homosexual marriages in the United States of America. Liberals and homosexuals have usurped the rainbow as their symbol of the sanctioning of sexual perversion. The presidential White House even used colored lights to flood the building in the various colors of the rainbow. These evil people won a political battle, but God has not changed his mind or the meaning of the rainbow. God is still the supreme judge. Marriage is still a covenant between one man and one woman. Homosexuality is still a sin, and the rainbow is still God's sign on the earth. So God, has sent reasons why a man shouldn't be in that state. He's tried to get out of that. I said that in the next 5 years, our country will be socialism. Healthcare is something that's very prominent on our minds right now. We're headed into single pay. That means the government will be our insurer. The government will decide who gets the money, who can have the surgeries and what have you. That's socialism. The government hands out food stamps and so forth. The government will determine who gets them and who don't. We even had a man that said, I'm going to give free college tuition. Have you ever sat down and thought that nothing is free? There is no free meal. Somebody has to pay for that. These young college students are going to get that. If we go to socialism, they're going to get that. But who's going to pay for it? It's still mama and papa that's going to pay for it. But when they reach the point, they're going to be the one paying for it. So what's the answer to all? Let me read another thing. I heard on TV this week, I saw a picture of the little unborn baby in the womb. And he looked up and said, I am not a potential human. I am a human with potential. So God tells us in various ways, what is the answer? People, the people of the world have I problem. I want it. I need it. I'm going to get it. The royal law, if you read James 2 and 8, says thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. When you get right down to it, the big thing that is the answer to discouragement, to discontent, to all these things is prayer. Let me read James. I'm not used to this Bible. I usually use my Testament with the New Testament church. James 5:13. Is any among you afflicted or suffering? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing psalms or praise. 14. Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. 15. And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up, and if he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. Confess your faults one to another, and pray one for another, that you may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer or supplication of righteous man availeth much. I make cards. Some of you may have received a card from me, but one I make, I'm a little hesitant in sending out, but here's my card. I have a man in a box. He's sitting in that box. The inscription reads, a person wrapped up in himself makes a very small package. That's eye trouble. We see these people that want to just say everything's about me. They're not concerned about their fellow man. But that's people that don't read. Since I've embanked on teaching this lesson, I began to look around. I can even look out here this morning. Have you ever looked at your fellow man? Look at his eyes and look at his mouth. Look around. Look at your fellow man. Is that the way he looks? Men that are not, people that are not happy, usually have a sullen look and a frown on their face. But this is what a Christian is supposed to look like. You can read it in his eyes. You can read it in his mouth. You can read it by his actions. So if you're dejected, if you're discontent, let me give you an example. In 1991, El Paso Natural Gas, who I worked for, and I was pretty well up. I had a lot of responsibilities. I wasn't all that happy, but I was making good money. El Paso Natural Gas sold out to another company. I was pretty excited when this company went to the big shots in El Paso and said, you have two men in jail, New Mexico, that our purchase of your company won't go through unless you promise us that those two men will be retained in jail at our disposition until we tell you we're ready for you to take them back. I felt pretty good about that. Here I was. They wanted me. They needed me. A couple of days later, after Sid Richardson made that statement to my higher-ups, the vice president of the company came to jail, invited me to go eat with him. He said, Don, we're abolishing your job. Ugh. Can you imagine that being me? It was. He said, we're abolishing your job. I said, you realize that the company can't function without what I do. The information I provide, the company can't function. What I did, I gathered raw information, refined it. I was responsible for gathering the raw information and for refining it, sending it to El Paso, and that's how they paid for the gas they bought and for the gas they sold. You realize that you can't get by without me? And he said, you've trained your people. Your people can perform their functions without you. Well, maybe so. But who are you going to put in to supervise my people? My boss supervised one man. That was me. I supervised 30. Still a big shot. He said, we're going to put your boss in there. I said, you realize that he don't know what I do, but your people do. I said, do you realize that he has no college? And he said, well, that doesn't really matter. Your people can do the job. Do you realize he's never been in the military? Because that doesn't make any difference either. So I went home. I had to stay until Sid Richardson told me I could leave. And that didn't set well with me either because I knew that they were using me. And El Paso was using me. So I sulked until that was a year that they kept me. And then at the end of that year, I went home. The next morning after I retired, I went down to my job, sat down, drank coffee with all these people, and we had a good time. Then they got up and went to work. Left me sitting on the coffee bench. So I went home and sulked for 7 months. till my wife got me a job to get out of the house. Said all that to tell you how bad it was, because I was concerned about me. What I didn't tell you was, when this vice president came down, he said, "We don't want to lose your expertise. We want you to move. We want to save what you know and what you can do. We want to move you to El Paso." How many of you have ever considered moving to El Paso? That's kind of like San Antonio. It's not a real pleasant place to live. I said, "I don't think so." At the time, I had my mother and my wife's mother. Both of them had moved from their homes to jail. Jail's about that big. But I was taking care of them physically. I said, "I don't think so. I'll just take my retirement." And he said, "Well, would you consider moving to Tucson? Have you ever been to Tucson? That's a real nice place to live. And you pay for it. It's kind of like New York." I said, "No, thank you." He said, "How about moving to Phoenix? Phoenix is nice, but it's expensive." So I said, "No." So I really didn't have occasion to sulk. They had offered me a way out. They wanted me. But that wasn't what I wanted. So I was discouraged. I was disheartened. I was even depressed. Actually, my wife had been praying about it. I was sitting in the house, sulking, watching TV and doing nothing but getting in her way. So she prayed about it. What happened? There was a brother that owned the largest construction company in southeast New Mexico, came to me and offered me a job. It was some weeks later before he told me that Pat had asked him to hire me. So anyhow, the actual answer to the question of what do we do about overcoming discouragement, frustration, depression, rely on God. Go to God in prayer. He answers prayer. I've got 10 minutes. Anybody got any questions? Huh? We're through.